Anantikori Vaishnabrinda ki jai. Namachai Silhari Dasta kor ki jai. Premzika ho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Pabunicha Ananda Siyadvaita Gidadha Sivasari Gaura Bhaktivrinda ki jai. Shishi Radha Krishna Gogopinath Shamakundarakun Giri Govardhana ki jai. Sri Vrindavandam ki jai. Sri Mayapur Navadip Dhamma ki jai. Sri Mad Bhagavatam ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru Engoranga Jai Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, text, I think, chapter 9, text number 10. Pravartate yatra rajas tamas tayo satvam cha mishram na cha kala vikramaha na yatra maya kim utapare harer anuvrata yatra sura sura architaha pavartate yatra rajastamastayo satvam cha mishram na cha kala vikramaha na yatra maya kim utapare harer anuvrata yatra sura surarchitaha parvartate yatra rajastamastayo satvam cha mishram na cha kala vikramaha na yatra maya kim utapare harer anuvrata yatra sura surarchitaha pravartate yatra rajastamastayo satvam cha mishram na cha kala vikramaha na yatra maya kim utapare harer anuvrata yatra sura surarchitaha Yatra rajastamastayo vamcha mishram nakana kantaha na yatra maya kim utapare hare anuvrata yatra sura surarchitaha Matajis? Vartate yatra rajastamastayo satvam cha mishram na cha kala vikramaha na yatra maya kim utapare hare anuvrata yatra sura surarchitaha Thank you. Forgive me, I forgot to say Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, word for word meanings. Pravartate, prevail. Yatra, wherein. Rajatamaha, the modes of passion and ignorance. Tayo, of both of them. Sattvam, the mode of goodness. Cha, and. Mishram, mixture. Na, never. Cha, and. Kala, time. Vikramaha, influence. Na, neither. Yatra, therein. Maya, illusory, external energy. Kim, what? Uta, there is. Apare, others. Hare, of the personality of Godhead. Anuvrataha, devotees. Yatra, wherein. Sura, by the demigods. Asura, and the demons. Architaha, worshipped. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In that personal abode of the Lord, the material modes of ignorance and passion do not prevail, nor is there any of their influence in goodness. There is no predominance of the influence of time, so what to speak of the illusory external energy? It cannot enter that region. Without discrimination, both the demigods and the demons worship the Lord as devotees. Purport. The kingdom of God, or the atmosphere of the Vaikuntha nature, which is called the Tripad Vibhuti, is three times bigger than the material universes and is described here as also in the Bhagavad Gita in a nutshell. This universe, containing billions of stars and planets, is one of the billions of such universes clustered together within the compass of the Mahatattva. And all these millions and billions of universes combined together constitute only 1/4 of the magnitude of the whole creation of the Lord. There is the spiritual sky also. Beyond this sky are the spiritual planets under the names of Vaikuntha. And all of them constitute 3/4 of the entire creation of the Lord. God's creations are always innumerable. Even the leaves of a tree cannot be counted by a man, nor can the hairs on the head. However, foolish men are puffed up with the idea of becoming God himself, though unable to create a hair of their own bodies. Man may discover so many wonderful vehicles of journey, but even if he reaches the moon by his much-advertised spacecraft, he cannot remain there. The sane man, therefore, without being puffed up as if he were the God of the universe, abides by the instructions of the Vedic literature, the easiest way to acquire knowledge and transcendence. So let us know through the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam of the nature and the constitution of the transcendental world beyond the material sky. In that sky, the material qualities, especially the modes of ignorance and passion, are completely absent. The mode of ignorance influences a living entity to the habit of lust and hankering, and this means that in the Vaikuntha lokas, the living entities are free from these two things. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Brahma Buddha stage of life, one becomes free from hankering and lamentation. Therefore, the conclusion is that the inhabitants of the Vaikuntha planets are all Brahma Buddha living entities, as distinguished from the mundane creatures who are all compact in hankering and lamentation. When one is not in the mode of ignorance and passion, one is supposed to be situated in the mode of goodness in the material world. Goodness in the material world also at times becomes contaminated by touches of the modes of passion and ignorance. In the Vaikuntha Loka, it is unalloyed goodness only. This is a very intense purport. It has a lot to it. So we'd like to just maybe kind of go down and maybe speak about a few things. It's hard to read it all and then just kind of come up. So maybe we'll take a little section at a time. But I thought very interesting here was that the mode of ignorance influences the living entity in the habit of lust and hankering. And this is very important because we're all in some capacity or other influenced by these lusty desires and hankering and lamentation. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Kama Esha, Krodha Esha, Raja Guna Samu Bhava. Mahasano Mahapama Vidhi Enam Iha Vairinam. And there Krishna says to Arjuna that it is only lust, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the mode, the material mode of passion. And later it's transformed into wrath. And then from there, it's the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world, which ultimately comes to lust. So we see that this is the real enemy of every living entity in this material world, these lusty desires of wanting to enjoy sense gratification. So what's interesting is that we're a spirit soul, a pure living entity, part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. But it's understood that when we come in contact with this material world, when we come in contact with the material energy, we see that we become transformed in terms of like who we are. Immediately, the material nature transforms this loving propensity that we have for Krishna, to love Krishna. It's transformed into lust by the association of this material world. And Srila Prabhupada gives an example of that by, just like if you have milk and you add tamarind to it, it turns into yogurt. It becomes transformed. So that is our condition here in this material world. We become transformed the minute that we touch this material energy. And we see that when this lust is not satisfied, it turns into wrath. So this is the arch enemy, this lust, because we become wrathful. We become very inimical towards Krishna, and we want to become Krishna. And so from that point, we also become illusion, thinking that we're this body. And this continues on, birth after birth after birth. So I thought it was very interesting that this understanding can be eradicated simply by the authority of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada says, so let us know through the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam of the nature and constitution of the transcendental world beyond this material sky. So we can't really understand that till we get rid of this lust within the heart. And this can be done by loving service to Krishna. Tata rajastamo bhava kama loba dayaschaye cita etar inavidam sitam satve prasidati. It's described that as soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart. So this word irrevocable, I know Maharaj has been talking about, you know, do you know what that means? He's asking us many times. So yes, I thought in this case, to understand what irrevocable means is extremely important. It means that it's final. When you revoke something, you can change it or you can do whatever you want with it. Irrevocable means it's final. This is the final situation. So when irrevocable, you know, loving service is established in the heart of the living entity, the effects of these modes of passion and ignorance, hankering, lamentation, lust, desire. These things all dissipate. They just kind of like just dissipate. They disappear. And from that, a devotee is established in goodness, and he becomes happy, completely satisfied and happy. So this is extremely, I think, important for us to really try to understand. Because in the material world, we have so many misconceptions due to the modes of material nature. But we have to understand that mode of goodness is where we have to go to. We have to come to that particular position of goodness. And when we achieve that platform of goodness, then we can become inclined towards spiritual activity or spiritual life. This can be done by training. This is very important, by training. And the whole Krishna conscious life is that. The Krishna conscious life is about training, how to become or develop this platform of mode of goodness. And the examples that Prabhupada has given on this is just like uncivilized, uncultured, animal-like man can be trained to become civilized. Or just like a wild animal, like a lion, or even for that matter, an elephant, although they're very strong, sometimes even vicious creatures, by training, the animals actually train how to listen to the instruction of the master. So training is essential. And if we take up the process of Krishna consciousness, we can be trained to become a devotee of the Lord, maybe even a pure devotee of the Lord, depending on how much we surrender to the process of Krishna consciousness. So there's different levels of that training. Tapasa brahmacharyena, samena cha, damena cha. Controlling the senses, the sex impulse. I guess that's a purification process. Austerity, sacrifice, giving charity. These things are there for purificatory processes. That is part of becoming a person in the mode of goodness. But that is a step-by-step process. Just like if you want to go to the Empire State Building, if you want to go to the top floor, you have to do so many steps. And sometimes that's very difficult. Some people may make that endeavor, but at a certain point they may say, I'm not going to do this anymore. It's too austere. It's too hard. It's not worth it. So this purificatory process is like that. If one wants to become very austere and eat very little, sleep a little, very, very difficult. And in Kali Yuga, practically speaking, impossible. More than likely impossible. No one has a desire like that. But that is a process for purification. And the other process for purification is Bhakti Yoga, the science of Bhakti Yoga. And in that particular science, it's like Papa explains it as being the elevator to get to the 100th floor of the Empire State Building. Instead of walking the steps and all that austerity and sacrifice, you simply get into an elevator and you press the button to the 100th floor and boom, you're at the 100th floor. And while you're going up on that floor, you can enjoy. You can have your friends with you. You can speak. You can have a snack. There's so many things you can do because you're going up to the 100th floor in elevator. Whereas if you were walking, you wouldn't want to do that. You'd be sweating. You'd be angry. You would be agitated and angry. So the science of Krishna consciousness is like an elevator. It actually takes you directly, immediately. The minute you come in contact with any part of Krishna consciousness, it takes effect immediately. I know in my own case, walking down the street and a devotee stopping us, giving us a Krishna book, boom, my life changed. And I can never forget that. That time, that moment that happened, I remember that after so many years. I remember exactly where I was, the street I was on. I don't remember the day, but I do remember the exchange of with the devotee and getting a Krishna book. So the process of purification through bhakti yoga is immediate and it's lasting because it's joyfully performed. Like, if, for instance, what is our austerity? We say, okay, don't eat anything unless it's offered to Krishna. And it's prasadam. What kind of an austerity can that be? That you can only eat prasadam. The wonderful prasadam. What an austerity. It's almost amazing. And you have to chant Hare Krishna. When you chant Hare Krishna and you do it nicely, it's the most wonderful thing that you've ever experienced in your life. It makes you so joyous. You want to dance. You want to chant. It's nothing but happiness. So that purificatory process outweighs any other kind of purification process. And it's so easily performed. And just by doing that activity, we are actually following the instruction of Krishna, who himself says, Bhakti Yamam Abhijananti Yavan Yas Chasmita Vitaha. You can't know me any other way. If you want to know me, there's no other way to know me but by that particular process of bhakti yoga, which is actually joyfully performed. And reading this, I can see that what we're experiencing in Krishna consciousness is the most beautiful activity that one could possibly have in their life. I was reminiscing like that not too long ago about how lucky I felt I was that I came in contact with the devotees and that I lived this beautiful life of Krishna consciousness. And we can continue with that by constantly reminding ourselves about Krishna. Shinvatam svakata Krishna punya shravana kirtana hridayante slohi badrani vidunoti surit satam. So Krishna, he's the Paramatma and he's in everyone's heart. And he's the benefactor of the truthful devotee. That's also a requirement. A truthful devotee, not pretending, but a truthful devotee. Then it cleanses the desire for material enjoyment from the heart of that devotee who develops an urge to hear. That's very important, to hear the messages of Krishna. That you can see is extremely important. We have this room here, we're having a Bhagavatam class. But we know this is the minority of people that want to come and hear the messages of Vasudeva, which are virtuous in themselves when properly heard and chanted. Now, that's very important because this word virtuous means of high moral standard. To hear about Krishna is a very high moral position. It takes a unique individual that wants to hear that high level of moral understanding. It's not an ordinary soul, very rare soul, in fact, that wants to hear about the Krishna and be constantly associated with Krishna. You can see if you find a devotee who can chant the Maha Mantra 24 hours a day, what an amazing person. You can see none of us can do that. If we said, okay, you have to chant all day long from now on. Sebastian, you must chant every day, all day. You think you could do it? Yeah. So you can see. Not easy. Not easy. Very difficult. So we actually are trying to do some kind of service, which is also hearing about Krishna. So that's why bhakti yoga is essential for all of us, in order for us to make advancement and purification. Okay, we'll go on a little bit. All right. The whole situation, there is one of freedom. I'll start over again. The whole situation, there is one of freedom from the illusory manifestation of the external energy. Although illusory energy is also part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, illusory energy is differentiated from the Lord. The illusory energy is not, however, false, as claimed by monist philosophers. The rope accepted as a snake may be an illusion to a particular person. But the rope is a fact, and the snake is also a fact. The illusion of water on the hot desert may be illusion for the ignorant animal searching for water in the desert, but the desert and water are actual facts. Therefore, the material creation of the world, of the Lord, may be an illusion to the non-devotee. But to a devotee, even the material creation of the Lord is a fact, as the manifestation of his external energy. But this energy of the Lord is not all. The Lord has internal energy also, which has another creation known to be the Vaikuntha Lokas, where there is no ignorance, no passion, no illusion, and no past and present. With a poor fund of knowledge, one may be unable to understand the existence of such things as the Vaikuntha atmosphere, but that does not nullify its existence. That spacecraft cannot reach these planets does not mean that there are no such planets, for they are described in the revealed scriptures. Yes, this is very powerful. Prabhupada is speaking so beautifully. In the Bhagavad Gita, it's described, Maya Yakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam Hetu Nani Nukunte Jagat Viparivartate. Yes, thank you. Jagat Viparivartate. That this material nature, which is of one of the energies of Lord Krishna, is working under his direction, O Son of Kunti, producing moving and non-moving living entities. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. So that's the material world. You can compare what the material world is and what we're hearing here from Srila Prabhupada's purport. This is what a devotee is aspiring to achieve, to get to the Vaikuntha atmosphere, to get out of this material nature, which is only an energy of Krishna. And although it's there and Krishna creates it, Krishna is aloof from this particular material world. He lets the material world manage itself. Just like we see, he sets things in motion. Krishna can just, by his glance, there's the pradana. And by glancing at that unmanifested stage, it manifests into what we see here today, what we're experiencing. And these are all created by Krishna, but he's aloof from that. Krishna's not in any way affected by this creation. He's completely aloof. And he lets the management be conducted by the material nature itself. This is how it works. You don't think about the sun coming up at a certain time. It just automatically comes. And it's never late. It's never too fast. It's exact. This is the creation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we also understand that this material world is actually being conducted by the three modes of material nature. The three modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, what we've been speaking of previously. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Daivahi esha guna mayi mama maya duratyaya. Mam eva ye papajante mayamitam taranti te. That the divine energy, these modes are the divine energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But those who have surrendered unto Krishna, to me, he says, O Krishna, can easily cross beyond it. So we're speaking about the passion, we're speaking about goodness, we're talking about ignorance, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the three modes of nature. The whole world exists on those principles. The whole world. No one is freed from it. But Krishna says that if you surrender unto me, you can cross over easily. So this science of Krishna consciousness is meant for us to cross over the modes of material nature, which are constantly afflicting us every single day. We can all admit that it's sometimes very difficult to get up in the morning. The mode of ignorance is so intense that barely you can open your eyes and crawl out of bed. So these are the modes of material nature. But if we aspire and desire to be Krishna conscious, then we can become protected by surrendering to Krishna. I'm thinking of that verse. Neha brikmana so stipat yavayo na vijate swapam apunya swapam apyasya dharmasya trite mahato bayat. Yeah, bayat, yes. So in this law, in this endeavor, there's no loss or diminution. And a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. So what is that fear? That fear is death. Each and every one of us are very much concerned about death. No one wants to die. We want to live for as long as possible. As you get a little bit older, I'd have to say, maybe Maharaj knows more, but you know, as you get older, death is something that you really think about regularly. You think how you're going to die, where you're going to die. Those things are in your mind. When you're younger, you don't think about that so much. You're thinking about enjoyment. But when you come over to a certain age, then automatically, daily, you think about this process of death. And you're trying not to be fearful of it, but it creates fear within the heart. So, if we take shelter of Krishna, and that's actually the beauty of this Krishna conscious movement, because whatever we do in Krishna consciousness is for long-term benefit. Activities in Krishna consciousness are a benefit for eternality. And if one actually is involved in the process of devotional service, that the results that we do, the work that we do, if it's selfless work for not wanting anything, any gain or sense gratification out of it, that there's no loss, because if the body passes away, that your Krishna consciousness carries you again to Krishna consciousness. So even if we don't make it in this particular lifetime, it carries you. All the pious activity that you've performed in devotional service, it carries you again to Krishna consciousness. Whereas in the material world, if you're doing something, if you don't finish it, it's a failure. It's a failure. I just, like we're doing construction here, of course, in the buffet, let's say. If we don't finish it, it'll be a failure. So if we left it and we didn't finish it, everybody would come up and say, Savas, what's going on? What are you doing? To consider it to be a failure. So whatever we do in this material world for sense gratification, for so-called happiness, it ends with the body. It stops there. It stops, finished. And that's why sometimes when people are at their deathbed, they're feeling so much moroseness, because they didn't finish this, I didn't finish that. It makes them feel like a failure. But in Krishna consciousness, we shouldn't feel like that. Because even if we don't come to the highest platform, it'll still carry on to the next birth, to the next life. And we still have an opportunity to go back home, back to Godhead. Okay, so I'll finish the purport. As quoted by Srila Jiva Goswami, we can know from the Narada Pancharatra that the transcendental world or Vaikuntha atmosphere is enriched with transcendental qualities. These transcendental qualities, as revealed through the devotional service of the Lord, are distinct from the mundane qualities of ignorance, passion, and goodness. Such qualities are not attainable by non-devotee class of men. In the Padma Purana, Uttara Kanda, it is stated that beyond the one-fourth part of God's creation is the three-fourths manifestation. The marginal line between the material manifestation and the spiritual manifestation is the Viraja River. And beyond the Viraja, which is a transcendental current flowing from the perspiration of the body of the Lord, there is the three-fourths manifestations of God's creation. This part is eternal, everlasting, without deterioration, and unlimited, and it contains the highest perfectional stage of living conditions. In the Skanda Kumudi, it is stated that unalloyed goodness or transcendence is just opposite to the material modes. All living entities there are eternally associated without any break, and the Lord is the chief and the prime entity. In the Agama Puranas also, the transcendental boat is described as follows. The associated members there are free to go everywhere within the creation of the Lord. And there's no limit to such creation, particularly in the region of the three-fourths magnitude. Since the nature of that region is unlimited, there is no history of such association, nor their end to it, nor is there end of it. The conclusion may be drawn that because of the complete absence of the mundane qualities of ignorance and passion, there's no question of creation nor of annihilation. In the material world, everything is created and everything is annihilated, and the duration of life between the creation and annihilation is temporary. In the transcendental realm, there is no creation and no destruction, and thus the duration of life is eternal, unlimitedly. In other words, everything in the transcendental world is everlasting, full of knowledge and bliss without deterioration. Since there is no deterioration, there is no past, present, future in the estimation of time. It is clearly stated in this verse that the influence of time is conspicuous by its absence. The whole material existence is manifested by actions and reactions of elements which make the influence of time prominent in the matter of past, present, and future. There are no such actions and reactions of cause and effects there. So the cycle of birth, growth, existence, transformations, deterioration, and annihilation, the six material changes, are not existent there. It is the unalloyed manifestation of the energy of the Lord without illusion as experienced here in the material world. The whole Vaikuntha existence proclaims that everyone there is a follower of the Lord. The Lord is the chief leader there without any competition for leadership, and the people in general are all followers of the Lord. It is confirmed in the Vedas, therefore, that the Lord is the chief leader and all other living entities are subordinate to him. For only the Lord satisfies all the needs of all living entities. So, it's a beautiful purport. One last thing. What's that? One last thing is that when I was reading this, I was thinking that it's the frog philosophy. The scientists, they're thinking they're so accomplished in their scientific research, and they try so hard to eradicate the existence of Krishna. But Papa gives the example of the frog who's living in a well, and he can't even imagine the length and breadth of the Pacific Ocean, this gigantic ocean. And when you do tell them this about this spiritual world, the first thing is that they think that you're crazy. You don't know what you're talking about. They don't believe it. And then even if someone comes and even gives them some more assurances that it exists, then they become so puffed up that they try to discredit it. And Prabhupada gives the example of the frog. He's thinking, that his well is all in all. And if you try to explain to that frog, no, there's a Pacific Ocean and it's this big, immediately they become, no way. But he said, no, there's people that say it. There's this, so much backup about what the Pacific Ocean is. And the frog simply wants to just puff his chest up. Prabhupada said he puffs himself up. And he's thinking, trying to figure out how to discredit, how to annihilate that understanding. And then he dies. So Prabhupada said the same thing with the scientists. They don't believe these things in the Bhagavatam. They simply try to discredit it. But what is their ultimate, what happens to them? In the end, they just simply die. Unsuccessfully, like the frog. I have a lot more to say. The purport was huge, but we won't go any further than that. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I'm late.